We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning and welcome to the second hour of Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers for this program, Harriet Williamson, Martha Dale, Henry Frayne, is at the controls this morning. In the early years of the 20th century, many Italian Americans, and among them many wealthy ones, living in Chicago, found themselves the target of an extortion scheme known as the Black Hand. Victims would receive a threatening letter demanding money, often illustrated with a drawing of a black hand. Now, a fair amount has been written about black hand crime, not just in Chicago, and people have written about this as something that originated in Italy. It was something perpetrated by Southern Italians and Sicilians, and that the victims basically were Southern Italians and Sicilians. And our guest for the program this morning, who's written a book on the subject, argues that, in fact, that that's really not true, that this was in many ways a very American kind of development, and certainly the victims were not just Italians. Our guest for the show is Robert Lombardo. He is a sociologist, also assistant professor of criminal justice, and member of the graduate faculty at Loyola University Chicago. He's been teaching there as an adjunct faculty member since 2001. He was appointed full-time to the faculty in 2005. And he is the author of a book that's entitled The Black Hand Terror by Letter in Chicago. It's published by the University of Illinois Press. And a book, it's a book that's just recently come out, so it's quite new. You can look for it in the bookstore if you'd like to look at the book. And as we talk, questions are certainly welcome. Questions from people who are listening are welcome. We have two different numbers for you to use. If you're here in Champaign-Urbana, the number is 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, good anywhere that you can hear us. So if, for example, you'd be listening in Chicago, you can use that number, and that's 800-222-9455. We also take questions by email, so you may email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. In any way, we certainly welcome your comments, but we hope people can be brief, and that'll help us keep the program moving along. But certainly, questions, comments are welcome. Professor Lombardo, hello.
Good morning.
Thanks very much. I'm good. Thanks. And yourself?
Good.
Thanks for talking with us. We appreciate it.
You're more than welcome.
So now, what we're talking about here goes back a ways, and apparently the black hand crime was big for a relatively short period of time, and we are talking about the early 1900s up until about 1920, something like that. That goes back a ways. What was it that got you interested in writing about this and getting into it in some depth?
Well, you know, I was actually working on a book about organized crime in Chicago. And, you know, one of the components of the history is certainly this Black Hand episode. And as I looked into the Black Hand and tried to understand actually what happened, you know, I realized that there was a real important story there that needed to be told just about the Black Hand itself. I'm still working on the organized crime book. Hopefully that'll be out in a year or so. But had to begin in the beginning, so I think covering this Black Hand episode was an important thing to do.
Yeah. And what are the years that we're talking about here when this was particularly active?
Well, particularly active, I would say, from 1905 until around 1915. However, there have been Black Hand crimes as early as 1892 and as late as 1931. But the great majority of them were really between, 1905, 1917, somewhere right around there approximately.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest year, in fact, the biggest years, in fact, were 1908 to 1911 when the most crimes occurred in Chicago.
And this was big enough, so at least in the city of Chicago, the police department actually had a squad. They had six, and I think that they were all, you write here in the book, they were all Italian-American, six police officers who that was what they did.
Yeah, that's correct. There was an Italian squad, or was also known as the White Hand Squad. There was a group in Chicago called the White Hand. It was a group of Italian-American business and community leaders that banded together to fight black hand crime. And one of the things they did is they asked the city of Chicago to hire Italian policemen. up until that time, there were very, very few, just a handful of Italian policemen in Chicago. And as a result of the efforts of the White Hand, by 1911, there, in fact, was an Italian squad. It was also known as the Black Hand Squad. It was also known as the White Hand Squad. Of seven officers, there was the Sergeant Gabriel Longobardi and his six officers, and they were, you know, quite effective in fighting Black Hand crime in Chicago. You know, we hear an awful lot about the Black Hand Squad from New York City that was led by Lieutenant Joseph Petrosino. He's a quite famous police officer nationally. But we really hear very little about Chicago. As a matter of fact, there's nothing ever been heard really about the Chicago Black Hand Squad. And as a former policeman, when I discovered this, you know, I took great interest in it to see that, you know, so often Italians are vilified in their relationship with organized crime. We know very little about the efforts of such people as the members of the White Hand Society and these heroic police officers that were in the Black Hand Squad.
Mm. So this and the phenomenon that we're talking about, Black Hand crime, it was seen in New York, in Chicago. Was this something that there were was seen in a lot of big cities of the time?
Yeah, it was essentially found wherever you had a large Italian population. Now, you mentioned in the beginning that Italians were not the only ones that perpetuated Black Hand crimes. As a matter of fact, in my research in Chicago, I identified 280 cases, and about 12% of the victims were not Italian, and 17% of the identified offenders were not Italian. So that kind of challenges the traditional narrative that Black Hand crime was regulated just to the Italian community. Mm-hmm. There were Greek Black Hand letters. I mean, I even found a Polish Black Hand letter. There was a Bohemian offender. So other groups, the Black Hand was a method of crime, not a criminal organization, which I think is one of the important points that I try to make in the book. It was a method of crime like robbery, burglary, auto theft. It wasn't a criminal organization.
And I think that that's, as you say, that's a point that you try to make, an important one, because I think that as people have written about this and talked about this over the years, going back some time, they maybe have gotten the idea, people have read about it, have gotten the idea, because this is the way that it was written about, that the Black Hand was some sort of organized criminal organization rooted in southern Italy, that it was a thing, it was an organization. And in fact, what you're saying is, no, it's really not true. What we're talking about here is a technique, a criminal method of extortion, and it was used, certainly it was used by Italian Americans, but it was used by a lot of other people as well.
Yes, that's correct. And part of the problem, not to pick on the media, but I mean, part of the reason that the Black Hand phenomenon was misunderstood was, in fact, the press coverage, the way that these incidents were covered by the local press, newspapers at the time. You know, to make a sensational story, something that has a sexy headline, sells more papers than just a reporting of a common crime occurring, you know, within the inner city of Chicago. You know, additionally, in 1951, when Senator Estes Kefauver held his congressional hearings on organized crime, the Congressional Committee concluded that the Black Hand was a transitional stage between the Mafia in Sicily and the eventual development of what came to be known as the La Cosa Nostra in American society. And that position has been the federal government's policy right up to modern times. As late as 2006, the FBI on their website essentially said that. They quoted Kefauver saying that the Black Hand was this transitional stage in organized crime. And my research certainly doesn't show that at all, that there was no relationship that I was able to find between Mafia in Sicily and organized crime, a la El Capone or other criminal groups with here in Chicago. It was a criminal phenomena regulated largely to Italian communities, a method of crime, a method of extortion, but not a criminal group or a nationwide, not a nationwide or international criminal group by any sense of the imagination.
So a lot of people use this this technique. Is there any way to say who it was that invented it or developed it or where it came from?
Well, I think that if you were to read the book, you'll see that there was like a series of progressions. You know, within the Italian community early on, like in the 1890s, if you wanted to threaten somebody, you would threaten him using the word the Mafia. And then all of a sudden, the word Black Hand started to replace that. It came into use as a term of threaten somebody with violence or harm. And then all of it kind of faded away after the phenomena died down. By the 1920s, neither term was very common. And yet they were both resurrected again in 1951 by Kieffer. If you follow the history of organized crime in Chicago, the Capone's boys were called the Capone Syndicate, and eventually the outfit. The federal government adopted this term, La Cosa Nostra, after the McClellan Committee hearings in 1964, in order to differentiate between the mafia in Sicily and Italian-American organized crime here in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Well, I suppose that you can see why if an individual is going to try to extort money out of another person, that it might work to their advantage if they could have that person, that is the target, the victim, believe that this wasn't just the work of one other person, but that there was this shadowy organization network of people that was responsible for this.
Exactly, and that was the power of the Black Hand phenomena. There's various explanations for the use of the term the Black Hand. Why did criminals adopt that name? And there's a number of different explanations. The most prominent of which probably is that it was a symbol used by an anarchist group in Spain in the early 1800s. And then you had the Spanish nobles actually govern part of Italy, the south of Italy, for a period of time. And people would have heard that term being used in a threatening manner. So people were familiar with the term Black Hand. So some enterprising criminal here in the United States probably remembered that from Italy and then just started to use it here in the United States. And then it spread.
Our guest in this hour of Focus 580 is Robert Lombardo. He's a sociologist. He is assistant professor of criminal justice and member of the graduate faculty at Loyola University, Chicago, and is author of a book that looks at the history of black hand crime in Chicago in the, say, early 1900s up until about 1920. The title of his book is The Black Hand, Terror by Letter in Chicago, and it's published by the University of Illinois Press. And questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. So when one received a black hand letter, what was sort of the typical way that this crime would be carried out?
Well, you'd receive a letter in the mail, or somebody would drop it in your mailbox, and it would tell you to bring $200 or $300 to a certain corner at midnight, or harm would come to you or a member of your family. And then the letter would be decorated with a black hand or a skull and crossbones, a dagger, dripping blood, or other evil symbols. And typically, if people complied and they brought the money to the designated place, 9 times out of 10, there would be nobody there. There was a method to black hand crime. There was a progression. You know, criminals knew that you'd probably go to the police. So they'd watch the location, not make the pickup, and then send a second letter threatening again, saying that the black hand knows all. We knew you called the police. We knew you came with family members. Again, they tried to impress upon people that the black hand was all-knowing. There might be a third letter or a fourth letter even before any money would be picked up or a meeting occurred. Quite often, they would tell the victim to look to a friend who was really part of the conspiracy. You know, an interesting part of the Black Hand phenomena, most of these crimes were conducted by people from within your own community, by local criminal gangs, and they knew who within the community was prosperous, who was doing well, who bought property, who owned a store. And quite often, there'd be someone that personally knew the victim involved, and this would be the so-called friend. Letter would say, the third or the fourth letter would say, look to a friend to intercede. So you'd think in your mind, which of my friends know all the bad guys in the neighborhood? Then you'd go to him and say, hey, you know, they're trying to extort me. Can you help me? And he'd say, well, you know, I know these guys, this gang down at the tavern. Let me go talk to him. But in reality, he was part of the scheme from the very beginning. And what I described was the classic black hand extortion with his friend involved. So the victims and offenders quite often knew each other, or at least were familiar with each other. The letters typically were not sent to total strangers.
And it would also make sense to target people that you knew had some money.
Exactly.
And so people who were prosperous enough so that you figured, well, yeah, if you put the touch on them for $100 or $500 or $1,000 or, you know, whatever it was, that they would actually, they'd be able to come up with the money.
You know, at times it became comical. I mean, I actually documented incidents where people in the same building would send blackhand letters to their neighbors maybe two floors up.
And somehow they weren't suspicious of the...
Well, often they were. Often they were. But, you know, part of the initial problem was that, you know, just like today, people in the inner city are often mistrustful of the police. I mean, the same thing occurred, you know, early on. The Italian immigrant, you know, came here, particularly from the south of Italy, came from a disorganized society, one where official government and police were really in kind of disarray or there was some corruption. And they come here into a city like Chicago, which at that period of time was controlled by machine politics, vice entrepreneurs, you know, gambling and prostitution was rampant, that profits from gambling and prostitution historically were used to fund political machines. They were very reluctant to turn to the police because they knew the police were controlled by the local politicians, and the local politicians, there's documented facts, actually employed some of these black hand guys to work in elections.
Hmm. So you talked about the fact that one of the things that the police department did was that they made a deliberate attempt to hire some Italian-American officers, and that they're previous to that, there hadn't been very many. So they put together this unit. It actually had a black hand unit, and that they were all Italian-American officers. Did Italian-Americans in Chicago, were they any more... Did they feel any better about that? Did they have any more confidence that those people, if they were part of their community, would actually do a better job and to try to get after the people who are perpetrating these crimes?
Yeah, without question. The evidence is clear that people worked with the Italian squad. They worked with the Italian policemen. They worked with the White Hand Society. You have to remember that many of the victims couldn't speak English. So one of the important things that the Italian squad brought to the situation was the fact that you had officers now that were Italian themselves and could speak the language. Additionally, what the White Hand Society did, they actually hired Italian-American lawyers to work with state's attorneys here in Cook County to help prosecute black hand criminals when they were, in fact, arrested and charged in court. Because, again, you know, even the defendant probably didn't, or the victim didn't speak English, so having Italian-speaking attorneys was critical to the prosecution.
You talked about the fact that what people have sort of said over the years, the way that they've talked about black hand crime, they talked about it as if this was an organized criminal network, and it was rooted in Sicily and in Naples, and that it was perpetrated by those kinds of people, and that unlike people. Talk a little bit more about some of the diversity, though, of people who were involved in this crime, both in terms of our perpetrators and victims.
Well, we had an Armenian victim. I'm just looking at my little list here, by the name of Marker Daridian. You had Gus Comex. He received a Greek blackhand letter. You had a guy named Amy Dubois, who received a Polish blackhand letter. George Pavlik, who was a Russian boy offender. Jacob Stech, Bohemian victim. There was also a German group that sent black hand letters written in German, signed. My German isn't that good, but signed the black hand in German, mm-hmm. the Schwarze Hand.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, even though it was largely an Italian phenomena, it wasn't totally an Italian phenomena. It was copycatted by criminals in the Italian community and also in the non-Italian community.
And were there some prominent Chicagoans that were the victims of this technique?
Yeah, there were. Tracy Drake, who was a non-Italian victim, the owner of the Drake Hotel, they attempted to extort him. And some northern Italians, as a matter of fact, the name escapes me, who the most prominent Italian at that time, matter of fact, his family just donated money to Loyola University. The Cuneo family was also, there was attempts at extortion of I think it was Andrew Cuneo, the patriarch of the family.
Hmm. How big was the Italian community in Chicago at that time?
150,000 people.
And were most of those people, had they come from the southern part of Italy?
Yes, by far, yeah, the greatest number came from the southern part of Italy. Early Italian migration, let's say after the Civil War, was from the north, but at the turn of the century, it was from the south, from Calabria, Sicily, the area around Naples, the south of Italy.
Tell us some more about the white hand societies. I'm really interested in the fact that within the Italian community, there was this idea that they knew that they had a problem, that it was a criminal issue, that maybe also they thought that this was an image issue, that was something that they were concerned about. And maybe they also were concerned about whether or not the power structure, there in the city of Chicago that was not Italian would be concerned about their problem. So they clearly felt that it was something that they needed within their own community. They needed to find a way to organize and deal with.
Well, the story of the White Hand Society is largely the story of one man, Camillo Vellini. He was a doctor, an MD, and his family, you know, is still around in Chicago. As a matter of fact, his grandson, Tom, you know, I talked to during this research. But the Vellinis are a very prominent family, the doctors, attorneys, businessmen. But he was the first president of the White Hand, and he had been somewhat of a hero back in Italy. He had was a knight of the Crown of Italy. He served in the Italian Navy. He received a medal from the city of Venice in 1886 for helping them in their cholera epidemic. He worked with Jane Addams here with Hull House. He worked with Mother Cabrini, the first a saint of the Catholic Church, the first American saint. He helped start Columbus Hospital, eventually Cabrini Hospital. He was a very prominent person, and he was very famous, actually, in the Italian community. And he had a saying that he would tell people when he met people, encourage them to be a good citizen, be industrious, and give your children an education. So he wasn't afraid. And Camillo Vellini was kind of like a bigger-than-life character, and he started this White Hand Society to work against black hand crime.
Yeah, I was really struck by the fact that they really, in a way that seems very contemporary, they were concerned with the image of Italian Americans. They said one of the first things they did, they put a notice in an Italian language paper there in Chicago saying, you know, please, saying to members of their own community, look, please don't do this.
Right.
They also said, let's, you know, ask people to don't blame Sicilians, first of all, secondly. And the third thing I thought that was really interesting was that they made an appeal to the press, the media of the time, not to talk about the Black Hand Society because they said there is no such thing. So they were acutely aware of how the papers were writing about this, and no doubt were aware and concerned about how this would affect the way that people thought about immigrants that had come from southern Italy.
Yeah, very much so. And they even published a report in 1908 called, it's a strange title, Studies, Action, and Result. It was the report of the White Hand Society, and they did their own investigation of black hand crime. And what I found fascinating sociologically, you know, at this period of time, you know, the prominent theories were essentially Lombrosian theories that criminals were personally what they called atavistic or a throwback to earlier stage of evolution, or that the criminals came from a group where there was something wrong with their culture, something wrong with their society that wasn't properly developed. And along came the White Hand Society, which, besides Mr. Vellini, there was also some very other prominent Italians in Chicago, and they wrote this report, and they had four conclusions: that black hand crime was the result of the isolation of the Italian community, the cultural distrust of formal authority held by the Italian immigrant, the existence of bawdy saloons and saloon keepers with powerful political connections, and an ineffective criminal justice system. If someone that's familiar with sociology would say, oh, my God, you know, these are social structural conditions that weren't even really talked about until, like, 1927 when Shaw and McKay published their famous book, Delinquency in Urban Areas, and for the first time related crime to the social structure of community areas. And yet, almost 20 years prior to that, the White Hand Society is talking about some of the same things as being the cause of black hand crime.
Yeah, so I think that really underscores the point I think that your argument that you're making in the book is that contrary to what people some people argued then, and maybe some people since have argued that this was an imported phenomenon, that it was rooted in the organized criminal gangs of southern Italy, that it was brought here by them to the United States and then perpetrated upon their fellow southern Italians living in the United States, that you're really making this argument that says, no, that's not true, and that this is something that was really an American phenomenon rooted in the conditions and in the Italian-American community, and you don't have to go outside of the community, and you don't have to go back to Italy to look for an explanation.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's a very well put explanation. You did good.
Well, what were the features, do you think, of the Italian community in Chicago, or for that matter, in Philadelphia, New York, or the other places where there was Black Hand crime that really helped to create an atmosphere for the proliferation of that kind of crime?
Well, I mean, sociologically, we call it social disorganization theory. Immigrants lived in the poorest areas of the city. In Chicago, we call them the river wards. They lived in the areas that had the largest numbers of social problems. I mean, for example, overcrowded housing, dilapidated housing, unemployment, poverty. There was also a certain amount of segregation and prejudice. Opportunity for employment, wasn't readily forthcoming. So, I mean, some would say that maybe the reason that some of these people turn to criminality, and it's not a good excuse, but some would argue that's because, traditional opportunities certainly weren't open to them.
We're at our midpoint, just a little bit past. Let me again introduce our guest, Robert Lombardo. He is a sociologist. He is assistant professor of criminal justice and also a member of the graduate faculty at Loyola University, Chicago. And he is the author of the book, The Black Hand, Terror by Letter, in Chicago. It's published by the University of Illinois Press and takes a look at the history of Black Hand crime in Chicago, pretty much in the period between 1905 and 1920. And he goes into the book to explain that what it was a method of criminal extortion. People would receive threatening letters saying that if you, terrible things would happen if you did not pay a specified sum. And as we have discussed, some people have talked about the Black Hand as if it wasn't some sort of organized criminal network based in southern Italy. And he makes the argument, and well, actually, in fact, if you look at it, that it really was, for reasons that he's discussed, a very American kind of phenomenon. And rather than being an organized criminal network, what it was simply a criminal technique, a way of trying to extort money from people existed for a while and then kind of dwindled and just ran out. If you're interested in reading the book, again, it's The Black Hand, and it's published by the University of Illinois Press. And here, questions are welcome to 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Well, I mentioned a little bit earlier about the fact that people that were involved with the White Hand Society trying to battle Black Hand crime, they were concerned with the image of Italian Americans, said, please don't blame Sicilians right away. Don't talk about this as if it was an organized criminal network, because it's not. But one of the things that at a particular time, there was so much of this going on that the Chicago police, they really embraced this idea that, whatever happened in the Italian American community was Black Hand related, and it had to be, and seems that they were really, they sort of took up these ideas that people in the Italian American community were trying to say, no, that's not right. Don't think like that. That's not the way it is. But it seems like the police very much did think that's the way it was.
Yeah, it took the White Hand Society 3 years to convince the police department to hire additional Italian officers. As a matter of fact, I came across a letter written by the chief of police at the time, Healy, to the mayor. And the mayor had recommended more Italian police officers be hired. And the chief wrote back that the worst thing he would do, the worst thing that could happen to the Chicago Police Department would be to hire more Italian policemen and to purchase three-wheel motorcycles. He included that in the letter. So I thought it was quite comical, but the letter certainly demonstrates that there was a certain amount of prejudice and discrimination by those in power against the Italian community. And, another big part of this, the original title of the book was The Black Hand, Organized Crime and the Social Construction of Deviance. And sociologically, one of the things I tried to do was to explain how a phenomena could be eventually defined as something other than what the facts, the objective facts, determined or showed it to be. And a lot of that has to do with a term that in sociological literature that's known as newsmaking criminology, which studies the relationship between crime, news, and societies, and, you know, how news organizations report. And there's some talk about organizations, whether they newspapers or CNN or television, they report according to themes, news themes. And once the theme of the Black Hand was established, just about every crime that occurred within the Italian community was attributed to the Black Hand. Southern Italian immigrants were very family-oriented, and in the south of Italy, the vendetta was not unheard of, and sometimes a transgression that occurred in Italy or a transgression that occurred here within the United States was repaid with violence. Vengeance was certainly, violence was often a part of vengeance. There's the classic story of an Italian girl becoming impregnated and the man refuses to marry the girl. Well, the father and the brothers respond, you know, with violence and even killing the individual person because that was the norm in their own society. So I think the newspapers kind of ran with these themes. There was a lot of violence that occurred in the Italian community, which wasn't right, but had to do with vendetta. Some had to do with protecting family honor. And if you look at newspaper headlines at this period of time, they'll say Black Hand commits a murder, and then you read the article, you find out the murder was the result of a love triangle. But the newspaper would use the term Black Hand in order to more or less make the article more sexy.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the thing, I guess one of the things I think is really interesting is that we think of all of the depictions of Italians and Italian-Americans involved in crime that we see in popular culture and the concerns that Italian-Americans today have about how Italian-Americans are portrayed. And I'm sure that it has been true over the history of America that there have been different kinds of organized crime that were involving people of different ethnicities. So it wasn't like that was exclusively an activity that was carried out by Italian-Americans. But Italian-Americans are very concerned about that. And what I think is really interesting here is that this shows you going back into the early years of the 20th century, maybe even before that, Italian-Americans even then were concerned about how it is they were treated by the media of the day and about this idea that, you know, there was a lot of organized crime and that people who had come from southern Italy were behind it.
Yes, I agree with you 100%. As a matter of fact, maybe there was more concern even back then. We don't have a white hand society today. You know, of course, organized crime as we came to know it is probably on its way out today. It's no longer as powerful as it once was. But even during its heyday, we didn't have this response from the Italian community to fight it like we had early on with the White Hand Society.
I'm still thinking about the fact that you talked about how the police chief who said that one of the worst things that he could do would be to hire more Italian American officers,
right.
The chief of police of Chicago, was that he thought that Italian-Americans somehow weren't up to the job of being police officers?
Well, I think he was just more or less following what was known as the hegemonic narrative, you know, just mm-hmm. the generally accepted narrative in society. Another interesting aside, you know, Italians at that time typically weren't eligible to become police officers because they couldn't meet the height requirement. So there was actually an ordinance passed at the city council lowering the height requirement to allow the eventual recruitment of more Italian police officers.
So I'm interested, you know, so within Chicago, how much support there was for this notion? I'm sure within the Italian-American community there was support for the notion that, well, it would make sense to have some Italian-American police officers in spite of the resistance of the chief. It seems that actually the Chicago media was pretty much on board with the idea that it would be a good thing if there were more Italian-American police officers.
Yes, they were. The media did, in fact, endorse the creation of the Italian Squad, or also what was also known as the White Hand Squad. The media was for it. I mean, the discrimination was largely on the part of the city. And like I said, it took a number of years to get the city to change their mind, and it was the continual pressure of the White Hand Society. You know, in reading all these different documents, I got the impression that the White Hand Society had very difficult time gaining access to City Hall, where they were able to gain access to, you know, other groups around the country, and even they helped support the earthquake relief efforts. The big earthquake occurred in Italy at that time. So they were working with the Italian government, you know, directly without involvement of the city or the state here.
You would think that, the people who were involved with the White Hand Society, so these were the Italian Americans who were concerned with black hand crime and wanting to do something about it, because they, it would be known who they were. I would think that it would be known who they were, that in fact that would make them a target of black hand crime.
Well, they were. I mean, all the members of the White Hand received black hand letters. Many were threatened. Some actually dropped out. The organization itself didn't last throughout the White Hand. I mean, throughout the Black Hand phenomena, they kind of fell by the wayside due to the threats from Black Hand criminals and the extortion letters that they received. They began to work behind the scenes and less publicly, you know, once these acts occurred. But you know, they continued to stay involved tangentially. Stephen Murato, who was the attorney for the White Hand Society, actually became a state's attorney himself, and he continued to prosecute cases involving black hand criminals and worked with in cases where the state needed an Italian interpreter, Italian speaker for other crimes in Italian communities and with Italian offenders.
What about the Italian-American officers? Were they particular targets, or were they not well known to the extent that they did they have a low enough profile so, for example, they could have worked undercover?
Well, I think they became known to the criminal community. Most were all hired from within the police department. Mm-hmm. Gabriel Longobardi, who became known as the Petrosino of Chicago, his life was threatened on two occasions. He was stabbed once, but you know, he continued his work. As far as they're being known by the community, I think they were, you know, fairly well known by the community. Interestingly, their patron was Assistant Chief Herman Schuttler. Now, Schuttler has a real interesting history. He's probably one of the most prominent police chiefs that Chicago ever had, and he had a reputation for integrity and honesty. And when Schuttler passed away while he was the commissioner of police, the Black Hand Squad was immediately disbanded, which I thought was kind of ironic. Some of them remained in the detective division and were used to investigate crimes in the Italian community. But as a functioning group, when they lost their patron within the police department, they were broken up.
Hmm. Tell me some more stories. I'm just really interested about the Black Hand Squad. I mean, do you have some more stories about some of the things that they did?
Oh, sure. Well, one of the most famous cases was the kidnapping of a young boy named Angelo Moreno. And, of course, the Italian squad worked at it. And at that period of time, even the inspector that ran the police district on the near north side where this young boy lived, he was also an Italian. His name was Revere. And so a lot of effort, having that type of clout within the police department, so to speak, there was a tremendous amount of effort by the police department to solve the case. It was a black hand case, and it ended up that in fact, the extortionists were relatives, in fact, of the kidnapped boy. But when they were brought to trial, the case was dismissed for some technicality. And an investigation by some churches in Chicago and the Chicago Tribune revealed that Alderman Johnny Powers, who was historically known as the Prince of Boodlers or one of the gray wolves of the city council, was involved having the case fixed. So it led to a large public outcry, and the Moretti brothers, the offenders, were rearrested and retried. Actually, they were sentenced to life, but then again, they beat it on an appeal, and they were back out on the street. So you can see that there was this political involvement. The officer, Anthony Gentile, that was instrumental in solving that case, was transferred from the near north side of Chicago all the way out to what we call Hegwisch, way out by Lake Calumet. So in the Chicago Police Department, being transferred to Hegwisch in those days, it was like being exiled to Siberia. So you can't help but think that there was some political motivation for his transfer. Additionally, Inspector Revere, was brought up on charges of corruption, and he was transferred. Now, the fact that anybody would have been charged with protecting gambling in the city of Chicago at that period in history is stranger than the fact that it occurred, because gambling and prostitution was wide open and official corruption was wide open.
So overall, how would you say that the overall during the time that the Black Hand Squad was in existence, they were successful?
I would say so. I think so. I think they were very successful. And, you know, one of the things they tried to get the public to understand in the press, again, that there was no criminal organization, that these people were not members of the mafia, that they were common thugs and criminals, and the Black Hand was a method of crime, not a criminal organization.
We're coming up to the point where we have maybe about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus 580. And again, for anybody who has just tuned in, I'll introduce the guest once again, Dr. Robert Lombardo. He's a sociologist. He is assistant professor of criminal justice and a member of the graduate faculty at Loyola University Chicago. Has been teaching there since 2001. And he is the author of a book that's just come out. It's published by the University of Illinois Press, and the title of his book is The Black Hand, Terror by Letter in Chicago. It looks at the history of black hand crime in Chicago, and this was something that didn't just exist in Chicago. It was seen in a lot of other cities across the United States, or at least in the urban cities in the Midwest and Northeast, from, say, the early parts of the 1900s up to about 1920. And as we've discussed over time, the way people talked about the Black Hand, people often talked about it as if it was an organized criminal network, and it was something that was based in southern Italy and that was brought over to the United States. And he really makes the argument, no, that's not true at all. It was a really very American phenomenon, and it was certainly not a vast criminal network. What it was a technique of extortion, which was used quite a bit over a period of time before it kind of died out. Questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455 is the Champaign-Urbana number. We also have toll-free line, good anywhere that you can hear us, including in Chicago. That's 800-222-9455. And also you can email your questions to will-talk@illinois.edu. We mentioned, I guess I mentioned a couple of times, that this is the sort of the peak period here for black hand crime was this period in the, you know, sort of the early 1900s, right up until about 1920. And then it just kind of seems to go away. Why do you think, or does anyone actually have some ideas about, well, what happened to, and why did this wave, this black hand crime wave, eventually kind of just dwindle and peter out?
You know, I actually charted on a graph the occurrences of black hand crime. And it's fascinating that in 1912, crime, black hand extortion, at least what was reported in the newspapers, plummeted at 85%. Now, the significant thing that happened that year was the exposure of Alderman Power's involvement protecting, in this case, it was the Carmelo and Joseph Nicolosi gangs in the kidnapping of that young lad, Angelo Moreno. So in my opinion is, I believe that it was the exposure of this political protection, as well as the fact that this gang, and there was a couple others that they were associated with, they were exposed. So there was quite a moratorium on black hand crime. The crime really was minuscule for the next 3 years. There was a spike in 1915 that I still haven't quite figured out why, but it was that 1912 incident of the arrest of the Nicolosi gang, the exposure of Alderman Powers, where black hand crime just plummeted within the city of Chicago.
We have a couple callers here. Let's talk with them. They're here where we are, and so I think we'll go to line number two. And this is first caller. We'll take line number two. This is Champaign. Hello.
Hello. Good morning.
Yes.
Quick question. You really haven't said very much about consequences. So how fearsome were these people? Even though it was on an individual basis, you're saying.
Well, here, you want to laugh.
Bad things really happened to people.
Not a lot of bad things did happen, at least according to what I've read and actually my data. For example, 86% of the murders that identified as being attributed to the Black Hand had no evidence of extortion. As a matter of fact, Henry Hyde, a Tribune newspaper columnist at the time, wrote a series of columns saying that the Black Hand never really killed anybody. Now, I don't totally agree with that. I mean, there are six cases in those that I've identified where I think the people were killed as a result of Black Hand crime. But there was a lot more noise made and threats made, and there may have been some bombs thrown. There were plenty of bombs thrown, shots fired through windows, broken windows, acts of intimidation. But as far as actually carrying out the threats, it seems that they weren't carried out to a great extent.
And if this wasn't the Mafia or Cosa Nostra, were there people in the Cosa Nostra that nevertheless got involved in this on an individual basis?
There's no relationship that I've found between the Mafia in Sicily and organized crime in American society. There was no organized crime here yet. Organized crime, well, there was in the form of syndicated vice tied to the political machines, protection of prostitution and gambling. But good old Al Capone and all that didn't start until Prohibition. It didn't start until really after the Black Hand phenomena.
Okay, thank you.
All right. And just, again, to kind of follow up on the caller's question, do you know, for those people who received a Black Hand letter and said, you know, if you don't give us some money, something really bad is going to happen, is there reason to believe that most people were fearful enough so that they complied, they paid up, or did most people just tear it up and throw it away and say, well, I'm not going to do that, or do you know?
Well, I don't think anybody knows how many people actually paid. I mean, we know how many people went, or we know some of the people that went to the police by newspaper coverage, and I've also identified actually 40 court cases, the actual prosecutions of Black Hand offenders. So, I mean, we know, for example, that at least that many offenses occurred. How many have gone unreported? It's just impossible to tell.
Hmm. Another caller here, someone on a cell phone, line one. Hello.
Yes. Can you hear me now?
Yes, just fine. Go ahead.
Okay. Yes, my question is to the speaker. Years ago, I come from the East originally, Pennsylvania, and Northeast Pennsylvania. But to my knowledge, I think you're correct in your analysis of the relationship of the term Black Hand to the Mafia going back. Of course, the Mafia existed in Sicily long, long before that. But the question is, the relationship. I know for fact they used to use the term black spot, and that goes way, way back in hundreds of years. If you were passed a black spot, which was not necessarily related to Italians, that was a sign you were marked for death.
Yeah, we saw a lot of that in the old pirate movies. They'd be passing around the black spot.
Well, it was also a term used in New York. And you're right, but the Black Hand, we even knew about it back. I mean, that was sort of common in the East, where it was sort of pre-organized around the 1900s, as you said. But the Black Hand really was feared. And what they would do, one of their first turns was they would send you a piece of paper with a black spot. And that was your sign. And normally, and it did become associated after sort of toward the teens and the early 20s, it was more associated with the Italian segment of society than anyone else. But I think even especially around the Chicago area, that term, they received that note was really bad. But by the time you received it, you were dead. You were almost dead. So I noticed you didn't use that term in your discussion this morning.
Well, I never came across the term black spot here in Chicago. But that doesn't mean it didn't exist out east, like you say.
But again, it sounds as if, with all due respect to the caller, that he's really repeating the version that was quite believed at the time, that was the way that people wrote about Black Hand and Black Hand crime in the media of the day, and which you seem to be saying, well, you're not sure that that's really quite the full story.
Exactly.
We're sort of, I appreciate the comments of the call. We're kind of coming down to the point where we have to finish up. Maybe we have about a minute or so left. And I'm just interested in, you know, what sort of thoughts you might like to leave with people. And I guess I'm particularly interested, being as I am somebody who works in the media, about the connections between media and how people perceive crime and who's responsible for it and what the nature of crime is.
Well, I think... The media does a pretty good job today, a very good job, actually, to report crime and without bias. But at this period of time, and you're probably familiar with the term yellow journalism, was pretty prominent among newspapers. And the whole idea of yellow journalism was that you sensationalize an article so people would read it. You know, there's a lot of competition at the time. Chicago had 8 different newspapers, quite different than today. No news media. So there was this tremendous amount of competition to sell papers. And reporters were actually out in the field, out on the street, and then they'd call in their stories to rewrite men. And the rewrite men would actually do that. They would rewrite the story, make it more sensational. The Tribune did a fairly good job in Chicago of reporting the facts, but they, too, also had a couple of very sensational articles. And I think this contributed to the phenomena. Also, just the state of criminology at the time, like I mentioned earlier, really focused on the individual and not the societal effects, mm-hmm. the problems with society that contribute to people participating in crime. And that probably had a lot to do with people's understanding. And also this idea of the mafia. I mean, this is a whole other conversation or a topic for another day, but the mafia in Sicily prior to the Italian immigration was a much different phenomena than organized crime in American society. It was really something other than, you know, what people typically believe.
Yeah. Well, there we have to stop. Our guest, Robert Lombardo, is Assistant Professor of Criminal Justice at Loyola University Chicago. His book is The Black Hand, Terror by Letter in Chicago, published by the University of Illinois Press. Professor Lombardo, thanks very much.
Okay, Dave, thanks. Thanks.
Support for the broadcast today comes from Warden Martin Subaru in Savoy at Subaru's Assembly Plant in Lafayette, Indiana, a zero landfill status designed to save cost and our future environment. It's part of what makes a Subaru. Information available online at wardenmartin.com or 352-8910. Programs here on WILL also made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, presenting the Band of the Irish Guards featuring pipes, drums, and Highland dancers of the Royal Regiment of Scotland, February 9th. More information can be found at KrannertCenter.com. That's it for us. Up next, the Afternoon Magazine with Celeste Quinn.
Thank you very much, David. A reminder that you're listening to WILL, 580 AM and 90.9 FM, HD2 and HD3, Urbana. Let's take a look at commodity prices. In Kansas City, March wheat is currently trading at 497 and 3/4, down 3 1/4. May, 509 and a half, down 3 1/4. Chicago March wheat, 493 and a half, down 4 3/4. May, 507, down 5. March corn, 361, down 6 3/4. May, 371 and 3/4, down 7. July 381 and 3/4.